yourselves.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
You're ready.
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
Then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
But if Biden gets in, the market will crash.
Yeah, you heard that right. That was President Trump warning us as a candidate that if Joe Biden gets in, the market will crash. And what did it do? Starting over the weekend in Asian markets overseas and then coming to the United States stock market. Well, here's the way the Wall Street Journal describes it. A stock market sell-off extending around the world with U.S. indexes sliding and volatility spiking. All three major indexes fell more than 2.5%. Stocks and treasury yields paired declines. Turbulence started in Japan, where the Nikkei 225 fell more than 12%, its worst one-day drop since the crash after Black Monday in 1987. Losses cascaded across Europe and the United States as investors dumped riskier assets. Well, maybe you believe Joe Biden's line. Joe Biden says, well, Donald Trump only cares about the stock market. That doesn't affect average people. Let me suggest something to you. If you are an average person, say you're a union worker making a good wage, where do you think your money for pension and retirement is stored? It is stored in stocks and equities. When the market goes down, your pension gets hurt. If you're a private sector employee and you have a 401k, that's where your retirement is. Well, that's where it's located. And why do you think the market is sliding off? Well, right now, the polls have showed that Kamala Harris is just a bit above Donald Trump, that she's leading him just a bit. Now, we've still got some considerable time between now and November the 5th, but the stock market is effectively saying if she gets in, the economy is going down the toilet like it hasn't already. And Trump had the prediction right as far as I'm concerned. If Biden gets in, markets will crash. Did they crash immediately? No, they did not. But what has happened since then? Well, job numbers are down just recently. Inflation continues to go, and there seems to be no solution to that. And yet, if you listen to what Joe Biden had to say, he tells an entirely different story, as though he expects you not to use your own ears and your own eyes to see what's going on around you. Well, we're going to get into the details of that in just a moment. First, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day, even here on a Monday, at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And cast a vote in our X poll. We ask what we think is the best question of the day based on the news of the day right now. I'm going to ask you straight out. Has Joe Biden wrecked the American economy? And I would say yes, and I'd back that up with facts and figures and numbers. Yes, Joe Biden has wrecked the American economy, except I don't think they thought the wreckage would come this early. It is. It has arrived. It is bad news. And I'll tell you what, there's one guy I know who can solve it, and that is not Joe Biden. If you want to join the conversation, naysayers always go to the head of the line. So if you want to tell me that you believe Joe Biden when he says, well, I took over a terrible economy and now I've made it much, much better. And he does say exactly that. But listen to the way that Joe Biden, because he is still the president of the United States, they haven't removed him yet. And Kamala Harris is still not the president of the United States. Thank God for that. But Joe Biden would have you believe that when he arrived in office in January of 2021, just 3.5 years ago, that things were in terrible shape. Listen to this.
What Mr. Trump left me. We had an economy that was in free fall. The pandemic was so badly handled. Many people were dying. All he said was, it's not that serious. Just inject a little bleach into your arm. You'll be all right. The economy collapsed. There were no jobs. Unemployment rate rose to 15%. It was terrible.
It was terrible. So Joe says, except the day he took office, We had 11 million jobs empty and available and waiting for Americans. 11 million of them the day that he took office. Not only that, but when he says the unemployment rate went to 15, actually it went to 16 during the pandemic, but it had already fallen to 6% by the time Joe Biden took office, and it was on its way down more. In other words, Joe Biden inherited an economy in great shape and an American economic engine that was ready to start taking off like a rocket. All he had to do was stay out of the way and not screw things up. Except that for Joe Biden not screwing things up, well, I'll quote the words of the great scholar and former president Barack Hussein Obama, never underestimate Joe's ability to F things up. And what is the biggest concern that is driving what's going on Wall Street? Number one, Kamala Harris becoming president, God forbid. Number two, a slowing economy, that is a big deal. Number three, new job numbers out last week, 114,000 new jobs, and most of them are in government and healthcare. Healthcare is at least pseudo-government at this point. Well, listen to the way the current Democratic nominee sums it up.
That, ladies and gentlemen, and everyone else, that is called Bidenomics. And we are very proud of Bidenomics.
We are very proud of Bidenomics. The highest gas prices around, highest inflation, inflation that actually outstrips the ability of people to afford it. People who have run down their savings accounts to just about zero. People have run up their credit cards to the max. People who have started defaulting on their credit cards, their car loans, and even their house payments. And then you go back to Joe Biden. And what does he say about America's current economy?
Let me say it this way. When I started this administration, people were saying there was going to be a collapse in the economy. We have the strongest economy in the world.
In the world. Well, apparently that didn't go over very well with Aaron Burnett, who just a couple of months ago, before Joe Biden finally dropped out of the race for re-election, she asked him about whether or not he could fix what he had created, and he simply denied the problem.
With less than 6 months to go to Election Day, are you worried that you're running out of time to turn that around?
We've already turned it around. Look at the Michigan survey. For 65% of American people think they're in good shape economically. They think the nation's not in good shape, but they're personally in good shape. The polling data has been wrong all along.
Now, that's the weird thing that Joe Biden does all the time. He cites a public opinion poll as proof that two-thirds of Americans say they're in good shape economically. I'd ask you, do two-thirds of you think you're in better shape economically today than you were just 3 years ago? Because I'd say it's more like two-thirds think they're not in good shape. And right after that, he says, but all these public opinion polls, they've been wrong all along. Just like Joe to cite a public opinion poll and then tell you the polls are completely wrong. And then this.
The idea that we're in a situation where things are so bad. The folks, I mean, we've created more jobs. We're in a situation where people have access to good paying jobs. And the last I saw, the combination of the inflation, the cost of inflation, all those things, that's really worrisome to people with good reason. That's why I'm working very hard to bring the cost of rentals down, to increase the number of homes that are available.
Actually, I think President Trump had it right. Listen to this.
The only jobs he created are for illegal immigrants and bounce back jobs that bounce back from the COVID. He has not done a good job. He's done a poor job, and inflation's killing our country. It is absolutely killing us.
It is killing us, and you're listening to the Lawrence Larson Show.
Kamala.
If reelected, he will be a dictator on day one.
Versus Trump.
What the hell did I do for democracy? Last week I took a bullet for democracy.
Let the games begin. This is the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead Fish Wrapper or mainstream media bias.
Now that she's the no voters necessary nominee of the Democrat Party, will the real Kamala Harris please stand up? After the economy, the biggest single concern of Americans on the right or the left is safety. So is the new DNC nominee, the tough-on-crime former DA and attorney general that she pimps herself out as today, the one who convicted 2,000 people on marijuana charges, and then when reporters asked if she smoked weed, she laughed, or I guess more accurately, she cackled. Or 2020 presidential candidate Harris, who spoke in favor of defunding the police and raised money to bail out accused violent criminals during the George Floyd riots. Her own words, it is old, tired, wrong status quo thinking to think you get more safety by just putting more police officers on the street. These days, Harris likes to present herself as Kamala the cop, something her progressive supporters didn't like much just a few years ago. But with violent crime rising and an invasion of illegals, including far too many terrorists, rapists, and murderers, what's a Democrat Party candidate to do? The answer seems to be reinvent yourself as something you've never been. Gaslight the public on your past history and hope for the best. The only question now is how many Democrat voters will actually fall for it? Glad to get your calls on this Monday. It's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Our question of the day comes in from Mark. Hey, Lars, the social media posting of an illegal street takeover and racing drew little attention from law enforcement officials ahead of time. What's the next event to be held by these undoubtedly Mensa members going to be? Let's see, rob a bank, steal an ATM, set fire to a ballot collection box. In any case, there are two less of them that need not be an issue in the future, along with one I believe is still in the hospital. Portland seems to be a mecca for these geniuses. Have a great day, signed Mark. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe you're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now.
I'm going to award today's Daily Grill based on information from Oregon Catalyst. They point out the latest economic data shows that unemployment is going up. The number of new jobs is not going up as fast, and yet there are new jobs. But here's what you ought to notice. In the last quarter, 63%, not quite two-thirds of all those new jobs were either in government, which is all taxpayer money, or healthcare, which is mostly taxpayer money. How sustainable is that private sector jobs decline while government jobs increase? These two sectors have been dominating the new jobs for much of the past few years. And then today's email of the day, and at the request of the sender, I kept his name off. Lars, last week my wife had a medical emergency at our home. The 911 operator kept me on the line updating her symptoms and status. While answering those questions, no less than six EMTs arrived at my door. I never questioned any of the qualifications of the responders, and they stabilized her quickly. I am grateful for the response and care and living in Washington County, not Multnomah County. Thanks, and please withhold my name. I did. You know what he's talking about? Multnomah County has a contract with the single biggest ambulance provider in America. That is called AMR. I have no financial connections, no dog in the fight with AMR. But AMR has been in a dispute with Multnomah County for more than a year. And what is the dispute about? The contract with the county says they are to supply two paramedics with every single ambulance, no matter what. Whether it's advanced life support, basic life support, or just transport, you have to have two paramedics. Well, there is a nationwide shortage of paramedics. So AMR explained to Multnomah County very simply, and they finally resolved this last week after months and months of dithering by the Multnomah County Commission. They said, look, we can't hire the paramedics, so let us run more ambulances with one paramedic and one EMT. The county refused to do it. By refusing in Multnomah County, that meant ambulance response took longer. Now, If you're in an emergency, if somebody is not breathing, if somebody is bleeding, if somebody has a heart attack or a stroke, do you care when you get medical response? Would you rather get it sooner with one and one, one paramedic and one EMT, or a lot longer or maybe not at all with two paramedics? Which would you prefer to have? The county finally came to its senses and said, okay, we'll compromise. We'll let AMR get by with one and one the way they do in most of the other communities around the entire United States where AMR provides the resources. And even the Daily Dead Fish Wrapper, which that's the Oregonian in this case, not the Seattle Times, they editorialized over the weekend on Sunday. They said, well, this is a good decision and we're glad they finally did it. The entire editorial was about the fight between the private company and the government agency that said, we don't want more ambulances. We want you to meet the letter of the law, or the letter of the contract. Now, what they didn't talk about is, did that delay response to people suffering from some kind of medical emergency? It did. Do you think the fish wrapper pointed that out? No, it didn't. It's as though the media always covers these things as a fight between one entity and another, and whether or not it actually hurts average people doesn't seem to matter to people like Helen Jung or Therese Bottomley. That's crazy. Now let's get to your calls on this Monday. Hey, Ron, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. And if people want to call in, it's 866-439-5277. What's on your mind, Ron?
You need to have that Oliver Anthony sound, Richmond north of Richmond. What's happened to this economy is basically you can't have a dollar bill when you have no manufacturing. We have an invasion force of over 10 to 20 million people that came to this country. They're getting paid better than those. It's trying to keep a roof over their head. Their rent went up too high, almost anywhere from $600 to $1,000 a month. And at the same time, businesses like Marquis Spas left out of my county in Polk County. Why? Why is my logins down? Why is my manufacturing? We got over 1 million acres of forest, and yet we care more about Ukraine. We care more about the invaders coming into my country, giving them hotels, giving them better benefits than we give our veterans like myself or anybody else. It's cost me $10,237 compared to 2021 of April.
Now, they figure the average American family has to be spending about $12,000 a year more per year right now than they did just 3.5 years ago because Joe Biden and his massive spending, you know, the infrastructure, the Inflation Reduction Act, the badly named bill that spent all that money, the Green New Deal, they've been pouring money into all those things have caused inflation, not to mention the fact that when they promise to pay off people's bad debts for college, that also creates a problem. You're telling all these people, remember you used to have that debt? We wiped that debt out. So go out and spend like crazy. When you do things like that by inserting too much money into an economy, you automatically get inflation. The average American, no matter what Joe Biden says, the average American salary has not kept up with inflation. Joe Biden has stolen from the American people, and it's a hidden tax, even though he promised not to raise taxes on average folks in this country. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. Forget that the same people who refuse to define what a woman is are now pushing you to vote for Kamala because she's a woman. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Man, I feel like a woman.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's the Radio Northwest Network, proudly serving the Pacific Northwest states for the last 25 years or so. Our ex poll today, has Joe Biden wrecked the American economy? I would say yes, and I'd point out that Donald Trump, President Trump, warned us that Joe Biden would wreck the American economy, and now we're seeing the first signs of it, bad job growth, a bad stock market, and of course, Americans loaded up with debt, empty savings accounts, and paychecks that have not kept up with the Joe Bidenomics inflation that's occurred. Today's X poll can be found at Lars Larson Show on X. You can also find it at LarsLarson.com. It's always brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Dan Mitchell joins me now. from Sporting Systems. He is in the firearms business. And I want to talk about a few issues that are going on right now. Hey, Dan, welcome back to the program.
Good afternoon.
Tell me about this. Apparently law enforcement is located in illegal or illicit firing range in the Mount Baker Snohomish National Forest. What's going on there?
Well, Fox 13 up in Seattle did a story, and I probably at the bequest of the local police chief, about an outdoor shooting area that was left in a pretty ugly condition. And so they went out and did a 5-minute story that made recreational shooters look pretty bad, because some folks had gone up there and hauled a bunch of stuff up there and shot it up and left it all behind. So, you know, they didn't represent the responsible firearm users of Washington State very well in that equation.
Yeah, and in that case, does it effectively damn the rest of us who shoot, who do pick up the trash when we're all done shooting anything, whether it's targets or tin cans?
Well, that's really what it's doing. It's reinforcing the media's narrative that guns and gun owners are bad. And the fact is, you know, this particular location is on public land. It's completely legal to shoot there. It's not legal to trash the place. It's not legal to haul garbage up there and shoot it and leave it behind. You know, any responsible firearm user knows to, you know, leave it better than they found it. You know, clean up your trash plus the other trash that you find around. And then it's a space that's usable for everybody. And you don't run into these situations like this.
Well, and the fact is, even the way they portrayed the story was Seattle News video of an illegal shooting range. The shooting was not illegal. Trashing it was illegal, but trashing it, even if you're not firing firearms, is illegal on public lands. And sadly, there's a lot of it to go around. But then connecting it back, saying, oh, this trashing was done by firearms enthusiasts, so therefore people who engage in those kinds of things are bad people.
Yeah, you can find the same sort of activity, you know, hikers, ATVers, mountain bike riders, anybody that's leaving a space worse than they found it, you know, they're likely breaking some law when they're doing that. And the folks that left a mess up there, that's breaking the law. So the law enforcement has every right to go up there and enforce those laws on littering and so on and so forth. But the other side is they can be proactive and reach out to organizations, the volunteer organizations, shooting clubs, a group here in the Northwest, TrashNoLand.org. It's every other month they're doing a big cleanup, and it's all volunteers, and they're going in with, you know, 40-yard trash containers and cleaning up cars and trailers and brass and targets and things like that. And it's all volunteer. It's all volunteer. And we've participated in those up here on Larch Mountain several times, and we work with the local law enforcement. DNR brings people out. They brought out corrections crews from Larch Mountain to assist in picking up all of the trash that gets collected.
That's from other people. It's from the relatively small group of people who don't follow the rules. The people who do follow the rules are willing to voluntarily go up and clean up a mess that they never created.
Correct. Yeah, it's every activity everywhere. You have a few bad users that make the whole group look bad. But like I said, that's the good thing about having organizations and volunteer community groups that go out and do these cleanups. But the reporters don't want to go report on that, because there's no energy in that. It's just people doing good things. They want to see people doing bad things, specifically if it fills narratives that they want to, you know, build a bigger backstop on. So,
hey, I want to ask you about another issue that Dan, I'm talking to Dan Mitchell from Sporting Systems, who's also the founder of a great civil rights group in Washington State. And no, we're not talking about race there. We're actually talking about civil rights like the First and Second Amendment. But I get this question all the time, and usually I think, well, this is a little too pedestrian to treat as a topic. but is frankly a concern for a lot of people. So I got this email over the weekend from Darren, and he said, my son's friend would like to store his firearms at our house. He's 19 years old. He's living at his parents' home. His parents don't want guns in their house. Can I legally store his guns for him? Much respect, signed Darren. And I referred it to you and to Kevin Starrett, who's in Oregon, the most knowledgeable person that I think I could find. Do I need to switch lines there, Joel? It sounds like, yeah, I'm going to do that because we got a better line with Dan. So, Dan, that question from people, can I store somebody's firearms at your house? Have you got a safe? I've got a safe. And I've always told people, I'm worried about running afoul of the law, whether it's in Oregon or Washington, that says you have to legally transfer the guns. Give us the details on that.
So you're going to run into different things from state to state as far as requirements, but by and large, you can store a firearm somewhere that's outside of your direct control as long as you've secured the firearm so that it can't be accessed by others. The same goes with if you're taking a trip somewhere or you're moving somewhere, you can lawfully ship or, you know, by appropriate carrier, your firearm to yourself in care of your uncle or your sister or even your work. They just can't access the firearm. So if you have a firearm that you want to store somewhere and it's in a secured container, you're not transferring the firearm to them. You're just simply storing it at that space. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's
okay,
akin to keeping your firearms at a gun club or something like that.
But my question is, if somebody comes and stores a rifle in my safe, I have access to that safe, but it hasn't been transferred to my custody. I have access to it. Does that violate the law? Because this is where I think people are getting turned around by this request from friends. Can I store my gun in your safe? Well, if I have access to it, am I breaking the law?
If you have constructive possession of the firearm and it's readily available to you and you can use it, then by most parts of state laws, that would count as a transfer and require, unless it's an immediate family member, would require an FFL to do a background check. But if you lock the firearm, put your own trigger lock on it, put your own breech lock on it, put your own safety device on it so that it can't be used by anyone else, it's an affirmative defense at that point.
But the burden of proof is on you, right?
The burden of proof would be upon the state to say that you had put it there without.
It sounds like Dan's phone may have given up the ghost. Dan, I appreciate that. That's Dan Mitchell from Sporting Systems. So as far as I'm concerned, I don't take possession of anybody else's guns because I'm concerned that a crazy prosecutor, and there are crazy prosecutors out there right now, might say, well, you had access to it, it was a transfer, and now you're in trouble. We'll be back in just a moment. Your calls are welcome. You're listening to the Lars Larson.
Naysayers go to the head of the line at the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Monday. You know, last week I told you that there were some brand new decisions and brand new studies, not just out of Great Britain, but also out of the United States. And they've determined a lot of these puberty-blocking drugs that they're using for so-called gender affirmation treatment. That means trying to turn boys into girls and girls into boys through either chemical or surgical mutilation. Well, the question is, somebody needs to be asking right now of the University of Washington Medical Center and Oregon Health and Science University Medical Center. UW is still a state institution. OHS and U has become a pseudo public corporation, still with ties to government. Both of them are doing this. Both of them are chemically castrating and medically mutilating teenagers. So given that, the team leader at the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has recommended approving puberty blockers for teens who identify as transgender, even while noting that a recent study showed that those drugs are, quote, associated with an increased risk of depression and suicide. Many activists claim that children struggling with gender dysphoria must receive experimental drugs to make their bodies resemble bodies of the opposite sex to stop them from committing suicide. And yet the FDA's own study says those drugs actually increase the risk of suicide. Well, since no reporters in Seattle or Portland who work for TV or newspapers or other have seen fit to ask the question, I'm going to ask the question right here. University of Washington and OHNSU, are you using these drugs? I think the answer is yes. They both have gender affirmation clinics. Are you making a lot of money from that? They are two of the biggest gender affirmation clinics in America. Last year, the gender business for the medical institutions generated about $3 billion. By next year, they're expecting to generate about $5 billion nationwide, not just at one institution. So if you're using these drugs, and the FDA's own study says it increases the likelihood of depression and suicide, why are you still doing this to kids? And if they don't give you a good answer, keep asking until they give you an answer. I mean, we've played sound bites from you or for you from people like Dr. Blair Peters at OSU. Sound bites that were actually run, the video was actually displayed for members of Congress last year, in which Dr. Blair Peters says, well, you know, we don't know if it actually works, but we're still figuring it out as we go along. Now, if you took your child to a clinic on any kind of medical issue, let alone one as thorny as transgender issues, and they said, well, you know, we don't know if this will actually cure your kid, but we're figuring it out as we go along, would you consider that to be modern medicine in the United States? I would not. I think, in fact, I think it's criminal. And the fact that the FDA now admits its studies show this stuff does not help steer kids away from suicide, it may, in fact, push them toward suicide, is a reason to ask UW and OHNSU the question. Ask them the question. Now, I'm asking the question, if you say, well, Lars, why don't you get somebody from UW or OHNSU on the show? We have asked, and time again, they either ghost us and do not reply at all, or when they do reply, they will say, well, we're trying to find somebody who's willing to come on and talk about this. They don't want to talk to anybody who's asking them tough questions. Now, what they will do is they will tell reporters who go to them and say, we want to do a positive story about gender affirmation treatment. They'll do that all day long. But they will not answer tough questions like this. Are you pushing kids towards suicide by putting these hormones and these drugs in the kids? The FDA's own study says you are. If you don't believe that, can you tell us the evidence that you're using to justify this kind of chemical castration of kids? And if you can't answer that, why in the world should you be in business at all? It is exactly the thing that should be asked of them. They're not being asked that now. And if you're a parent, maybe you should pick up the phone and call. When I call either one of those two institutions, they either will not answer, will not call you back. And the reason is I want to ask them a perfectly reasonable question. If you tell us that you're protecting kids from suicide, but the FDA says the drugs you're using on these kids are pushing them in the direction of suicide, how do you explain the disconnect? If you can't explain it, then stop doing it for the time being. This segment of the show comes from 540training.com. Concealed carry, home invasion defense, and personal defense online at 540training.com. That's 540training.com. Our X poll today, has Joe Biden wrecked America's economy? I would say yes to that, and I would say that President Trump warned us that Joe Biden was going to wreck the economy. And all the way along, Joe Biden has been simply saying, oh, no, things are going great. When I took over the country, inflation was at 9%. That is a lie. It was 1.4%. He will tell you that unemployment, the day he took office, was 16%. It was not. It was 6%. It was already on the decline before he showed up and took the oath of office. And then let me point out what I call the Sherlock Holmes dog that didn't bark. Right now, Joe Biden has been replaced as the Democrat Party candidate for president by Kamala Harris. The world is going through an economic meltdown. The United States has seen the incredible wreckage today on the stock markets that indicate to some extent the health of the economy. And where is Kamala? Kamala is nowhere to be found with nothing to say about an economy that she'll say, hey, it's Bidenomics, and we're very proud of it. It's Bidenomics, and we love it. You got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
We are ready.
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Ready for partner.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
And then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Monday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and it's our pleasure to serve the Pacific Northwest states, Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, and provide honestly provocative talk. And if you want to take part in that conversation, that's easy. At 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Our ex-poll question today, has Joe Biden wrecked the American economy? I would say yes to that, and I'd back it up with facts and figures and the actual results. And Donald Trump warned us that if you elect Joe Biden, that bad things are going to happen. They are happening. They have been happening for the last 3.5 years. So you can find the question at Lars Larson Show on X. You can also find it on my website at LarsLarson.com. Always brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Now, the question I want to ask you. Is the major Democrat candidate running for Oregon Attorney General, since that office has finally been cleared of the toxic and, I think, corrupt Ellen Rosenblum, is that person who is now the Democrat who's running for that office actually in favor of enforcing the law? Now, you think the natural answer would be, well, he wants to be Attorney General. Of course he wants to enforce the law, but there's evidence to the contrary, and the guy who knows it best is my longtime friend and a good friend of the show, former District Attorney Josh Marquis. He is himself a Democrat, so I would say he doesn't have as much of a dog in the fight as I do. Josh, welcome back.
Thank you.
Mind telling my audience?
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Would you mind telling my audience about why Dan Rayfield is not the right choice for the top law enforcement officer in the state of Oregon?
Yeah, well, for one, Rayfield has absolutely no experience in law enforcement as a prosecutor. And although the attorney general's job is not mostly as a prosecutor, it, as we've learned from the last about 10 years of Ellen Rosenblum, who has brought Democratic politics to the forefront in almost every decision, we need to get back to the kind of attorney generals we had with Dave Frohmeyer and Artie Myers, who were respectively Republicans and Democrats. They were different. Dan Rayfield is current Speaker of the House and one of the main architects of what is turning out to be disastrous HB 4002. That's the law that supposedly replaced Measure 110. And we're seeing it play out
the one,
right now.
Just for people who don't know all these numbers, because most people outside of politics don't, Measure 110 effectively legalized hard drugs. And now we've had literally thousands of people dying in Oregon and Washington as a result of drug overdoses, most especially from fentanyl. So 4002 was passed by the last legislature. It was supposed to fix the situation. And he's the guy who let this thing go through the way it did.
He's sort of one of the architects. And what it does that's so utterly ridiculous is instead of simply reinstating possession of drugs as a crime and allowing drug courts to go forth as they did for years and offer addicts a path to sobriety, they cooked up something called deflection, which doesn't really exist anywhere else. And more importantly, they're funding county by county. So the organization that Mike Schmidt, the now soon-to-be-gone district attorney of Multnomah County ran before he was DA, is doling out tens of millions of dollars. And it was just announced that they're giving about a quarter of all that money to Multnomah County. But they're running a, quote, deflection center where all the police are going to do is be a taxi service for drug addicts. And if the drug addict basically doesn't want to go to treatment, no problem, no consequence. Want to start all over again? 30 days, no problem. Do it again and again and again. Dan Rayfield, who wants to be attorney general, is one of the biggest architects of this. And the Republican running for attorney general, Will Lathrop, who is a former prosecutor in several Oregon counties, is saying, wait a minute, this is a bad idea. We need real law enforcement leadership back in the attorney general's office. Now, most people, as you say, don't pay a lot of attention to the office of attorney general. It's like people voting for judges. They don't think it directly affects them, and it doesn't for the most part. But if you like the way Oregon's been going for the last 4 to 8 years, and you particularly like the way it's been going in terms of drug enforcement or the complete lack of drug enforcement, then Dan Rayfield's your guy.
And by the way, just so you know who's backing Rayfield, the folks behind Ballot Measure 110, the drug legalization scheme, are not from Oregon. They're not even from the Northwest. They're from the East Coast. It's the Drug Policy Alliance. And they're using Oregon as a bit of a test tube or a guinea pig to test this out. And if they can brag on its results here, I don't think they can, then they can say to the rest of the country, we ought to legalize drugs across the rest of America the way Oregon has done. Now, I think they're still capable of saying it's a great result in Oregon, even though it's demonstrably not, because of all the deaths, all the other crime that goes with it. But the guy behind the Drug Policy Alliance that funded Measure 110 in Oregon with millions of dollars is George Soros. And who did Dan Rayfield take money from in August of this year?
George Soros, along with almost every other major Democratic. And one of the things that what people might say, well, why do we care about attorney general? A $500,000 contribution was engineered by Senator Ron Wyden to the Oregon Democratic Party, or properly called the DPO, the Democratic Party of Oregon. And the only person under Oregon law who could have prosecuted that case was the attorney general. Supposedly, Ellen Rosenblum disqualified herself. But then magically, one of her own subordinates, the head of the Criminal Justice Division, said, oh, we've examined this case after months and decided not to prosecute it. Now, the mainstream media is not even raising their hand and saying, wait a minute, what was the attorney general who was a major Democratic Party official doing, quote, withdrawing from it? Why didn't we have a really genuine independent special prosecutor look at it? I haven't heard that question asked in any mainstream media.
Well, and here's the other problem, Josh, just so people understand. You've got an attorney general's office that's one of the largest AG offices in all of America. 1,200 or 1,300 people who work in it. It's far bigger than even states that have bigger population. And she says she's disqualified because of her connections, but some guy who works for her, who she can fire tomorrow if she wants to, he's not conflicted as well?
I found this unbelievable, because the idea of disqualification is something that's not uncommon in legal offices. I had it happen to me when I was district attorney, even in my small office with just 20 employees. If there's a conflict, what you have to do ethically is you have to find a lawyer utterly unconnected to you, which usually is called a special prosecutor, somebody who doesn't work for you and doesn't isn't married to somebody that works for you, to do it. So, you know, one of the biggest election scams involving one of the, you know, this guy ended up, the guy behind this cryptocurrency scam is doing, I think, 20 years in prison.
25 years in prison for Sam Bankman-Fried, who engineered $500,000 to the Democrat Party. They resisted giving it back. They finally, I think, donated the money, but they had taken it in violation of the law, and they're not prosecuted for it, and the AG made that call. Josh, thanks very much. Back in a moment, I'll get to your phone calls and emails. And now that she's no longer, well, now that she is the nominee of the Democrat Party, will the real Kamala Harris please stand up and tell us what she's... Being a... What is...
X-1.
exercising the right to free speech every day. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I kind of want the real Kamala Harris, or Kamala Harris, whatever you, I don't care what her name is. I think she's a fake and a phony all day long. And in fact, we're going to see whether or not the media is willing to dig into this. I mean, they were happy to dig into Donald Trump's background on all kinds of things. Will they actually look at Kamala Harris's stated record? And especially when it comes to law and order, she wants to portray herself these days as Kamala the cop, except she does not seem like a cop. There was a time when Kamala Harris advocated for more criminal justice enforcement of the laws. And then there was the time during the George Floyd riots when she realized, as a Democrat Party candidate for president at that point, this is the 2020 election, she had to portray herself as being soft on crime. So she actually said, we should defund the police. And she actually raised money herself to bail out accused violent criminals from jail so they could be back on the street to do more violence. Well, now all of a sudden she's got to do another 180. So she was Kamala the cop. Then she was Kamala the defund the police and raise money for bail. And now she's back to trying to be Kamala the cop. Will the real Kamala Harris please stand up? I'm going to get to your calls first at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Danny's calling in because I mentioned that the FDA has a brand new study in which they recommend that there be chemical castration drugs used on so-called transgender children, people under the age of 18 who say they're confused about their gender. And the FDA said, okay, we'll approve the drugs, but we're going to tell you at the same time that we believe that these drugs actually drive some of those transgender kids to depression and possibly even suicide. And I suggested, then we ought to be asking all of those clinics, many of which get their money from Medicaid and from private individuals, we should ask them if these drugs drive kids towards suicide rather than towards some sensible resolution of their problem, then should they be using them at all? Danny, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm a regular listener of your station. And you're absolutely correct on everything you're saying in the fact that my daughter, I won't name the high school, but she's been a counselor for the last 15 years, and she deals with this on a daily basis of how these kids can go and get these type of hormones and blockers and everything else and making decisions at 15 years old, 16, 17, whatever, right in that area when they're, you know, the frontal lobe. They're not even in a place in their mind to be able to know how to make lifelong decisions. And so you're right. She has seen this happen. Kids coming to her, you know, she even had a situation where a person even tried to castrate themselves.
Oh, my God.
And so it is it's a major problem, and people are ignoring it, especially in a state when your governor says, you know, I'm one of two lesbian candidates in the for governor, so we live in such a liberal area that she can't even report. At I think she told me at 15 years old, they can, and if a doctor will give them these hormones or do what they need to do to change, she can't even report that to the parents.
Yeah, the parents are deliberately kept in the dark. And as far as I'm concerned, this is child abuse. So this is your sister that's the school counselor?
No, she's my daughter.
Your daughter. So your daughter is put in a position where she has to do something unethical, maybe even something that is physically dangerous to the point of having the potential to end a child's life, and she can't report it as abuse of that child because the abuse is being done with the knowledge of state authorities and with the knowledge of people who are licensed by the state and federal government, and that would be doctors in clinics.
Exactly. You're exactly right.
And so what do you do? What do you do in that? What does she do in this case?
Well, she has to. Well, her hands are pretty much tied in the fact that she can only say certain things. For example, kids have to report to her in the morning what they identify as for that particular day, and what pronoun she has to ask them what pronoun they want to be addressed as. And so then that has to go to all the different classes, and then whatever they're identifying as, furries or male or female or whatever it might be, if that teacher messes up and doesn't address them in what they have required them to do, then they're in trouble.
So you know, look, there are plenty of good teachers out there, but there are some that just go with this program. You know, if somebody told me pronouns, I'd say, you know what, I'm going to make my class like the military. I'm going to call somebody Johnson or, you know, Miller. I'm going to call them by their last name and nothing else. Miller, stand up at the board and do a geometry problem. Johnson, you know, I guess you have to leave all the titles off as well. So you couldn't call her Miss Johnson or Mr. Johnson. You say, Johnson, get up to the board. And if a teacher responded that way, I wonder what the school would do when you say, well, you didn't refer to it as her or him or they or them. You say, nope, I'm not putting my career on the line. I'm going to call them by their last name. So unless they change their last name, that should be perfectly good. But some of this is really disturbing because, Danny, every state in America has what's called a mandatory reporter law. And what it says in simple terms, I mean, they put it in legal terms, but in simple terms, it tells people who work in things like your daughter's profession, if you even suspect that a child is being abused physically or sexually, probably even psychologically, that you are required to report that abuse to authorities. And yet now we've told all these people, including your daughter, hey, you may know for a fact that this child is seeking the kind of changes that, you know, from adults, because all the drugs and all the therapy and everything else is coming from adults. And you're being told you must keep it a secret from the parents and you must help facilitate this treatment that might actually end in their suicide. In that case, I think that child is definitely being abused. Is that an out for your daughter to say, I'm going to follow the mandatory reporter law, I'm going to call local law enforcement and say, I believe that this child is being abused. Adults are giving her or him, chemicals to change their bodies, and that is physical abuse, and I'm reporting it as such. Could she do that?
No, I don't believe she can. I think that she's controlled by the state. In fact, in this last couple of years, she's in her probably another 6 months before she gets her doctorate that she decided she couldn't almost deal with the public school system anymore, that she wanted to go into private practice, because there's so many things that her hands are tied. You're right on. And I'm glad you're talking about it because it is. And there's case histories of these kids that have gone too far with all these hormones and blockers and everything else. Yeah. They get depressed, and there is a suicide problem.
Well, and Danny, all I'm telling you is they've always portrayed this problem as if you're confused about gender and we don't give you gender affirmation, we make you more likely to suicide, except the FDA is now admitting some of the drugs that we're using on kids to do puberty blocking are actually driving kids into depression, driving them toward suicide, and that's coming right from the FDA. So if that's the case, and you're pushing kids toward suicide, I would say they're now being abused by the system. Good luck to you, Danny, and good luck to your daughter as well. Back in a moment, 866-439-5277. You've got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. Broadcasting the sound of freedom. Here's Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to take your calls on a Monday. 866-HEY-LARS is the number to call. If you happen to be a naysayer, 866-439-5277 will put you first in line. Well, now that the Supreme Court of the United States has blocked the crazy power grab by D.C. bureaucrats, better known as the Deep State, is it time for Congress to actually get to work and do its job? I thought I'd put that question to our friend Phil Kirpin. He's president of American Commitment, and he joins me now. Phil, welcome back.
My pleasure, Lars.
I've done what I can to make it clear to my audience what the Chevron doctrine was. It essentially said, and you correct me if I'm wrong, it said if you've got a federal bureaucracy, say the EPA, for example, and they seem to be a good one. And if the EPA goes out and makes a bunch of rules that have the force of law, but they have no input from the Congress and they have no specific authority to make those rules that have the force of law, then we aren't going to assume, as the courts, that the bureaucracy is right and anybody who sues over it is wrong. We will actually take a look at it. This seems, well, it has the promise of curbing the deep state to some extent. Is it time for the Congress to actually get back to writing laws? And if we want to have laws, fine, but have the Congress pass them so when people are unhappy about the result, they can vote those people out of office, which they can't do to the bureaucrats.
Yeah, I think all of that's right. I would just add that, what the courts have done, they've basically said that we're not going to be like it was for the last 40 years, where if you have a lawsuit against a federal agency over whether their rulemaking is lawful or not, the agency automatically wins unless you can prove they were arbitrary and capricious. That was the standard under Chevron. So instead of like which side has the better interpretation of the statute, it was, is the government at all reasonable? And if they are, they automatically win. So it was a stacked deck. You could occasionally win litigation against federal agencies, but it was very difficult. They had to be wildly out of line because of the way the standard was set. Now they've thrown that out. Under these new cases, it's going to be basically the judges deciding what the law is, which is a big improvement over the bureaucrats deciding, but it's really still not what we want, Lars. It's still, you know, we're replacing unelected bureaucrats with unelected judges and as sort of the arbiters of kind of what the parameters of regulation are. I would like our actual elected officials in Congress to develop enough regulatory expertise to make these decisions themselves instead of punting them to any unelected people, whether it's in the bureaucracy or in the judiciary.
Well, and in fact, in the case they actually decided, it's called Loper Bright, and it's kind of, you know, interesting because I've known a lot of fishermen in the years, and they, you know, National Marine Fisheries said, hey, we need to have observers on all these fishing boats, so why don't we make a rule saying you can't do commercial fishing without having these observers. And then when somebody says, well, who's going to pay the salaries of those observers? The bureaucracy just said, let's make the fishermen pay, even if the amount they have to pay is more than the money they make at the end of the day by going out and going fishing. And it was going to be disastrous. And Loper Bright was won at the Supreme Court and the bureaucracy lost. So what's it going to take to get the Congress to actually step up and say, if there needs to be a rule, we need to pass it. And then if they're, you know, if the voters don't like it, they can remove us, which, again, as you point out, you can't remove the judges for the most part, and you can't remove the bureaucracy for the most part. So let's get it back to the people who have to run for re-election every couple of years.
Well, Lars, we've been pushing this idea for the last, I don't know, 20 or 30 years at this point, that any major economic regulation, any regulation that has a major impact on people, the agency should just be able to propose it but have to send it up to Congress to actually be voted on, and that should require the actual constitutional process of majority in the House, majority in the Senate, presidential signature or veto override before it can take effect. And for the last, I'd say, 15 years or so, this has been called the Reins Act in the House. There were previous iterations even before that, but we've passed this in the House, I believe, now five times, including twice in the current Congress. We've never even had a vote in the Senate. It all, you know, good ideas go to the Senate to die, unfortunately. But, you know, one of the things I was always told over the years is, well, you know, maybe you'll get this through the House and even the Senate, but no president would ever sign a bill that says their agencies have to send their proposals up to Congress, so this will be vetoed, except every single Republican candidate for president, including President Trump, for the last few cycles has said, yes, I would sign that. Yes, we do need to fix our system and put Congress in control of these major decisions to be accountable to the people. So if we could get, if Trump wins and we could get this to his desk, he would sign it. I don't think we'll ever get it through the Senate by itself, stand alone. But I think if we include it as part of one of the major fiscal packages, we could get it through that way. And in fact, the House tried to do that in this Congress on the debt ceiling. They attached it and it passed the House that way. They ended up negotiating it away, and it was not included in the final McCarthy, Biden deal. But I think that's the way we finally get it done. And I think we just need to bang this drum and keep building support in the Senate. As I said, we've done it many times in the House, and we've now got to the point where I think most Republican presidents would be willing to sign it because they get that we need to put Congress in charge of the major economic policies.
I mean, Phil, wouldn't it be fair to say that the reason they go through the bureaucracy and the reason that Congress is willing to acquiesce and say, yeah, you guys write the rules, is because they know that those regs would never get passed, at least passed the way 100%. The people behind them.
Of course.
Congress would say no. Well, if the people's representatives would say no, it shouldn't be a rule, should it?
It should not, in my judgment. And, of course, basically since the cap-and-trade bill crashed and burned back in the first Obama term, the entire global warming agenda has moved without any votes in Congress. It's all been through the agencies, which is, the highest order of business for the radical left globally at this point. But they do not have sufficient support from the voters to pass any of this stuff through Congress, which is why it's all shifted into the agencies. And, it's great that the courts will make these decisions rather than the bureaucrats. I think that'll stop a lot of the worst excesses. But it's not the real solution. The real solution is that Congress needs to take the responsibility for writing the laws. That's the way our system is supposed to work.
Well, and what seems really ironic to me is that people run for Congress because they want to have the power to be involved in the decisions. And then once they get there, they say, oh, if somebody else will actually do my job for me so I don't have to take unpopular votes in favor or against something, then I'm happy to let the bureaucracy take all the authority that I got by becoming a member of the Congress. So all they want is the fancy office and the title?
A lot of them, I think, just want to go on TV and be called congressmen. And, look, one of the reasons that so many of the most important policy issues don't get decided by Congress is they haven't put in the work to become experts, to hire the staff to put in the work to become experts, to understand these regulatory issues which cost trillions of dollars to the economy with any degree of expertise. And so they just punt. They say somebody else will sort it out. And I really think that Congress needs to develop a lot more capability, a lot more expertise, a lot more knowledge, and take responsibility for these things.
But Phil, all they'd have to do, say in the Loper Bright case, if they'd called up some fishermen, who are affected by this, say, hey, if they do this and they make you pay for the observer to be on the board to watch you fish, how's that going to work out? And the fishermen say, well, most days the money we make will all go to pay for the bureaucrat to watch us fish, and none of it will go to us, and we will go broke. And if at that point they call up somebody from the agency involved and say, send your best guy on this issue over. He needs to sit in my office and explain why this is a good idea, and then ask them the question, aren't you going to make a lot of the fishermen go broke? Well, yeah, that might happen, but too bad. So what? And then the member of Congress says, then you're not making this rule. And if the Democrats want the rule, they need to come up to us on Capitol Hill, have some hearings, hear from the fishermen, hear from the bureaucrats, and then say to the Democrats in this case, hey, you want to do this and put the fishing industry out of business? You go ahead and vote for that and see how things go at the next election. That is Phil Kirpin. He's the president of American Commitment. Phil, thank you very much. When we get back, I'll get you your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Our X poll today, has Joe Biden wrecked the American economy? No naysayers who are standing up for Joe at this point. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Be honest. You're listening because you like what you hear, right? Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I got to tell you this. There's apparently a fire burning in Goshen. And Goshen is a little town kind of south and east, not too far east. It's right off I-5 near Eugene and Lane County. And apparently it's gone to a level 2 evacuation order, at least according to KEZI, which is the ABC affiliate down in Lane County. I'm curious. That's a terrible place to have a fire. And it really suggests bad management of public lands. But then again, that's a problem that's endemic to the Pacific Northwest. Glad to have your calls as well at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. This segment of the show brought to you by NickShivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home immediately. No showings, no hassles, and you pick the closing date. NickShivers.com for details. To your calls now. Let me start with, let's start with Ron in Tacoma, listening on the Radio Northwest Network and KVI. Hey, Ron, what's on your mind?
Lars, you know, when you were sitting there talking about the whole thing with the teachers and the children, it dawned on me, I know that they can make their little rules saying that they can't be held accountable, but you do realize in this country that we have a separate charge. It's called conspiracy. And
yes.
Even though a lot of these people aren't doing their jobs, these prosecutors and these law enforcement stuff, see, that's why they have conspiracy. Because back in the old days, some of the feds and even some law enforcement were conspiring with criminal organizations like the Ku Klux Klan, etc. So even though they're getting away with this right now, I think that's going to start cracking soon when people wake up to the fact that they can start going after these people for conspiracy.
Well, and just remember that if you want to charge a conspiracy, it has to be conspiracy to commit a crime. And then you have to say, well, what was the crime? In this case, you know what I'd suggest? I wish some of these, and what Ron is talking about is, I suggested to a man who called in, said his daughter is a school counselor. She's got almost daily requests for people to call students by different pronouns and all that. And she finds out that some of them are getting medical treatment that their parents know nothing about. And the school administration is saying, you must not tell the parents. They could follow that law. But I'll tell you the workaround I would use is to say, okay, I can't tell the parents because my, you know, the bureaucracy of the school has said you can't tell the parents. I would simply say, I believe this is abusing the child. I'm going to report this to law enforcement by way of the mandatory reporting law, which is present in every state. And if you say, well, what good is that going to do? Well, if the police are told a child is being abused, a child is being given drugs that make permanent changes in the child and might even drive the child to suicide, I think that easily qualifies as abuse of a child. If the police then make inquiry, where are the first two places they're going to go? They're going to go to the child's home and they're going to go to the child's school. And they're going to ask, is this child being abused? And when the parents say, well, what kind of abuse are we talking about? Well, we understand the abuse might be your child is being given hormones that are puberty blockers with an aim of stopping them from becoming a boy or a girl, depending on the case. If they inquire of the parents then find out what's going on and they can stand up and actually protect their kid. It seems like a workaround. I'd want to check it with a couple of lawyers and make sure it works. But you could say, I followed the law. I didn't notify the parents. I notified the police, and the police notified the parents. Let's go to GT in Pleasant Hill. Hey, GT, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Thank you, Lars. And I appreciate all that you do for us, getting words out about this stuff.
Thank you, sir.
I was listening to that same gentleman and the previous caller. I feel really strongly that what this boils down to is an element that's lacking in our society. And I think it's courage at the grassroots level. I think that people are so afraid of everything and everybody anymore that they won't rally behind their own children and go down to the school as a group and shut the dang thing down. It's like, the public schools are a nuisance at this point. They don't have, in Oregon, they have the worst test scores. They got this transgender movement going on. Hundreds of thousands, if not millions or billions of dollars going to teachers' organizations that are failing our kids. When are we, as parents, grandparents, and those counselors that care so much, and the teachers who care so much, when are we going to rally together and just shut the dang schools down? The private schools.
I'm with you. Number one, they've got to go to school choice, because a lot of parents would pull their kids tomorrow if they had even a fraction of the resources that go to the public school. But number two, the very issue we've been talking about. How can you stand up and rally to the defense of your child if you don't know your child is under attack? And you say, well, how could they not know that somebody at a school, a counselor, for example, has hooked the kid up with a doctor who's going to give them puberty blockers paid for by Medicaid? How would the parent know about that? The very fact that they have passed laws in Oregon, Washington, forbidding telling the parents, they know that if the parents were told, the parents would object.
Lars, but that individual, that gal who was being discussed, She has the ability to put her job on the line. She has the ability to risk her career for the sake of the very children that she says she loves and wants to educate and protect. And people aren't willing to do that. There was a day when people would say, I am not going to be party to this, regardless of my career.
That's a very good point. By the way, a federal court has just ruled New Jersey's ban on AR-15s is unconstitutional.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen,
you ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
And then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you and always glad to be on the Radio Northwest Network, serving the Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, and providing, we hope, every day, honestly provocative talk radio for the Northwest. If you want to dial in, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. You can send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Cast a vote in our X poll. Today's question, has Joe Biden wrecked the American economy? I would answer yes, and point out that President Trump warned us that Joe Biden would do that. Today's X poll is brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. On the phone with me right now, the man who does the batting cleanup talk show on our Seattle affiliate, KVI, would be Ari Hoffman. Ari, welcome back.
Good to be here, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing well, but there are a bunch of subjects that we kind of want to tag today. But let's start with the economy because, I mean, is Joe Biden and is Kamala Harris or Kamala, whichever you want, I don't care, Kamala Harris going to be able to explain why it is that the accusation from Donald Trump that they were going to wreck the economy has not come true? And what are they going to do about it?
Kamala Harris has a problem because she was the deciding vote on the so-called Inflation Reduction Act. And if she hadn't voted the way she did, we probably wouldn't have put a bunch of money inside a t-shirt cannon and started spraying it into the economy and thereby devalued the dollar, racked up more debt, and then caused, or at least partially caused, a lot of this crisis today. There are so many contributing factors. Right now, here's another thing. The U.S. had better hope that Israel doesn't bomb Iran's oil refineries, because if they do, who are we going to call? Russia? Who are we going to call to get the oil from?
I mean, that's and think about how easy they are to hit. I don't know if people know this. Karg Island is the transfer point for a lot of Iranian oil. It's a very small piece of territory. There isn't much on it except a whole bunch of pipes and a whole bunch of transfer facilities. It's always been sort of a tasty target. If you said, how do we shut down Iran's export of oil? Hit Karg Island. Hit it with a couple of cruise missiles. They'll be out of the oil business for a while.
Exactly. That would be the thing I would do if I was Israel right now. I'd say, let's go attack that, because then we don't have to worry about Iran for a long, long time. And meanwhile, it wouldn't be a problem, except Joe Biden doesn't want anybody drilling on any lands here in the U.S. And then he made Russia basically a gas station with a nuclear arsenal. So this all goes back to bad decisions. Also, let's not forget what happened with the housing market. When you factor in the fact that people can't borrow money because interest rates are so high because of inflation, that now people aren't spending the money they would normally be spending on housing, the housing market's in trouble, and people don't have as much money to spend. Then you factor in the jobs report, which the Biden administration always comes out with these glowing numbers in the jobs report, and then a couple weeks later, when nobody's paying attention, brings those numbers down back to reality, saying, oh no, we got it wrong, let's revise them. This is 100% on the Biden-Harris administration.
And then consider the fact that of those jobs that are created, the new jobs last week, 114,000, which is really, really nothing. And then you say, well, where are most of those jobs coming from? their jobs in government and a few in healthcare, but most of healthcare is paid for by government in this country, whether it's Medicare, Medicaid, or other programs, and then Obamacare. So you say, so almost all of America's supposed growth under Joe Biden has been a growth in government? Doesn't sound like anything to brag about. And today, I'll point this out. This could change in the next hours or the next 24 or 48 hours, but so far, Kamala Harris is nowhere to be found to offer up whatever she might offer up about what seems to be a real train wreck on Wall Street and a train wreck on foreign markets. This is bad stuff.
Well, let's be fair. She hasn't really been anywhere to be found for the media in the past, what, 16 days now? Where yep. She doesn't want to answer any questions at all, because then the word salad comes out, because then the nervous laugh comes out, because any of that comes out. The problem the Democrats have right now is they know she's a liability, so they're just keeping her hidden from the media like they did with Joe Biden. And people say, well, it's a long time till Election Day. No, it's really not. You basically have this month, and then early voting starts in Pennsylvania and other states. So if they don't get her in front of the American public soon, and by that I mean the Republicans, Donald Trump should be accepting every debate invitation. He should be saying, let's debate every day from now until Election Day. He should be accepting every single invitation, no matter what the rules were for Joe Biden, because he needs her in front of the American public, because most people have no idea who the Vice President of the United States is.
No, and when they start to listen to her, they wonder, how did she get that job? And then they find out, oh, your party picked her as the nominee. Who picked her? The American people? American Democrats? American voters? No, that would be a few party elites. All the Democrat Party seems to have these days is liabilities. I mean, do they have anybody out there who's doing a great job?
No, if they did, we probably wouldn't be having the economic issue we're having right now. We probably wouldn't be having the foreign on the international stage. We wouldn't be having those problems. Basically, here's what I put out to my audience all the time, Lars. I say, can you name one person in the Biden administration you would trust with your kids? Can you name one person in the Biden administration you would trust with anything? And the answer is always no. You look at the Republican bench, though people may not have one of them this time around, you have a very, very deep bench of talent. You have some great people over there. Who are the Democrats out? Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Pete Buttigieg. Really, we're looking at the real. You want to talk about weird people, then let's talk about them. But really, you're looking at it and you go, these are not people I want in charge of a lemonade stand.
No, you don't. And would you mind telling my audience about Emily Randall, who's running for the U.S. Congress? She's a Washington Democrat Party state senator, and she wants to be in the Congress, but she also wants to pack the Supreme Court, or so she says.
Oh, she's a fun one. So she's one of the ones that passed the gas ban that's not a gas ban, that is a gas ban in the middle of the night at 2 a.m. And this is the one who had a social media post talking about how much she loves her gas fireplace when there are power outages. So this is the person we're talking about. She did a quasi-interview with a random person who was on the street at a parade, I believe it was last weekend, where she's talking to this person about to impose these changes to Title IX so that women can play, so that men can play in women's sports. She wants to pack the Supreme Court. She wants to reform the Supreme Court. So this is the kind of person that Washingtonians could be sending to Congress if they're not smart and don't vote for the Republican.
No, I got to update you, though, Ari. It's no longer men competing with women. As of last week's Olympics, it's men, two of them, one of them from Taiwan, who get to punch women in the face. And the result we get is the natural one. What happens when a male athlete punches a woman in the face? Well, she goes to the mat. And that's what she wants to support, this Emily Randall?
Well, it just seems to me that I got a daughter who's going into high school this year, and we don't have a Jewish league. We play in the private school league with the other schools. And I got to wonder what she's walking into. Now, thank God the school hasn't had an issue yet, but it's a Washington sports league. It's only a matter of time until they start having those kind of issues in this league also. And at that point, I'd be like, yeah, I'm sorry, but I'm not putting you in harm's way. I'm not putting you in danger if you're in any of these sports. And I would raise holy hell with the league.
Well, thank God you're doing that, because I think we've all read the story about the volleyball player who's still partially paralyzed because she got hit with a ball spiked by a male who identified as a female. Not in the Northwest, but it doesn't matter. The ball in the face could happen anywhere. Ari Hoffman from KVI, our Seattle affiliate. Back in a moment, we'll talk about a watchdog group and double registration of American voters. That's next, and your calls too.
listening. You're proving how smart you really are. Lars thanks you.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Well, Kamala Harris is supposed to announce tomorrow who her choice for vice president is going to be. Apparently, she's having a tough time with that choice. And then she's got this. The American stock market took a gigantic whack today that they knew was on the way because they saw foreign markets responding over the weekend, and it took a big hit. And why? Because, well, they saw some numbers that indicated that Kamala Harris is now slightly more likely to be elected president of the United States. And apparently the stock market's reaction to that was, oh, we get four more years of what we've had under Joe Biden. Well, that's a bad idea. Sell what you can and take the cash out. So you've got all of that. And she hasn't commented not one bit on what is happening, nor has Joe Biden had much to say about it. So that means we're basically on a rudderless ship, because you would expect that the leadership of the United States, either Joe Biden or Kamala Harris, as the Democrat Party's convention choice, I guess. They haven't had their convention yet, but in a couple of weeks, they will announce to their voters, Kamala Harris is the choice. And no Democrat Party votes by citizens were actually required by that. So all of that is going on. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it happens right here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And if you've got a moment, vote in our poll on X. We take the news of the day, we pick something really fresh and current, and we ask you this question. Today the question is, has Joe Biden wrecked the American economy? I would say yes, he has, and Donald Trump warned us that it would happen. Not only that, but you should be aware, if you're actually paying attention to what Joe Biden says, he has been gaslighting Americans in the most severe way. He will tell you why, when I took over, and he has said this, unemployment was at 16%. It was not. It was at 6% and falling at the time he took over. He will tell you that inflation was running along at 9%. It was not. It was running at 1/6 of that at 1.4%. Now imagine if we could ever get back to 1.4% inflation and interest rates came down and jobs went up. Well, that would be a Trump economy. All Kamala Harris can say is, oh, we love Bidenomics. Why? Bidenomics has done all kinds of wonderful things for Americans. When Joe Biden took office, we had literally 11 million open available jobs that anybody could take. We don't have that anymore. We used to have 1.4% inflation. We don't have that anymore. The day that Joe Biden assumed office as president of the United States as a result of a fraudulent election, the interest rate on 30-year fixed mortgages for anybody who wanted to buy a house, 2.65%. So even if you had lousy credit, you were going to get a mortgage somewhere in the low threes. Do you know where it sits now? More than double that. It's actually 6.34%, which I think is the lowest we've seen in months. So has he wrecked the economy? New jobs reported last week for the month before, 114,000. And most of that in government and medical care. So if you don't happen to be in either of those two fields, you're probably out of luck. Has Joe Biden wrecked the economy? I would say the numbers indicate that he has. And yet he'll be glad to tell you why he took over an economy that was in free fall under Donald Trump. Except the numbers don't back that up. So on First Amendment Friday last week, we asked you, should Donald Trump even bother with a debate against Kamala Harris? And the answer, 76% of you said yes. I happen to say yes. But 24% of you said no, because there is no advantage for Donald Trump in debating Kamala Harris. I happen to believe that he should debate her. And I think if you thought Joe Biden did badly in that debate, can you imagine what's going to happen when Cackles shows up on a stage somewhere and she's asked reasonable questions by the moderators who will be on her side? Like, how do you fix inflation? We've seen her ask that question. She has no answer. And if she's asked at all about her background in politics and Willie Brown or anything like that, why, the media might just explode. Well, I asked you that question last week. Should Donald Trump even bother? It was a 76% yes, and only 24% of you said no. Now, let me tell you about this new report, because an awful lot of you have asked, well, Lars, what's going to be different about this year's election than 2020? And the answer is a number of states have decided to change their laws about how elections are held. Now, they changed the laws, and this should seem strange to you if you actually believed the reporting of the mainstream media. The mainstream media quoted all kinds of people saying from the left who said, why, we just had in 2020 the best election, the most secure election that America has ever had in its history. And immediately after that, more than a dozen states around the country made major changes in their voting laws. And that might make you wonder, if you wonder about things like this, if we just had the best election that America has ever held, not something I agree with, but if we did have this fantastic election and it was very solid, it had a lot of integrity and you can trust the result, if you believe that, why did more than a dozen states decide to change their laws? Well, here's one indication. There is a watchdog group out there. It's called Fight Voter Fraud. And what they did was they took a look at the registration of voters in a number of states. And guess what they found? They found 297,856 voters who are registered in two or more states. Now, you might expect when somebody moves, maybe their old registration stays in place for a while, but they have a new registration in a new state. Nearly all of those voters were only registered in two states, but about 3,000 of them were registered in three states, and 24 of them were registered in four states or more. That's either somebody who moves all the time or it's somebody who's actually cheating. The report also found more than 3,000 voters who had voted at least twice in elections between 2016 and 2022. And while most only double voted once, 248 of them double voted twice, 194 of them double voted three times, and 180 of them double voted four times. Now, you might be, you'd be able to get away with saying, well, I got a ballot at my old address and I voted on the day we moved. And then I moved to my new address and registered and I voted there. So I accidentally voted twice. How do you accidentally vote four different times? The states involved Indiana, Kentucky, New Jersey, New York, and Texas had over 10,000 double registrations. That's how crazy our elections have been. And if you ask why I don't trust them, that's some of the information that makes me distrust them. Let's go to Steve. Hey, Steve, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
I don't think that he should be debating her until maybe next month. I mean, that would be a better time, I think, because he's going to go annihilate her. Not many people are going to see it because of vacations and whatnot and people still out of school, and then they're going to replace her again.
Well, you are aware that the next presidential debate is scheduled to take place on the 10th of not August, but September. It's already set next month. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, yeah. I mean, he should be, but people are saying, you know, he should debate her next week or whatnot. Absolutely not. September would be a better time, even late September, just so they can't do any more chicanery and switch her out.
Well, you know, the fact that Joe Biden fell on his face months ago in a debate didn't stop it from affecting their election. I have a feeling that after the Donald Trump, Kamala Harris, you're going to see sound bites from that debate being replayed over and over again.
Steve, the Lars Larson Show. Just think of him as your concealed carry. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. As you may have heard, a stock market sell-off that actually wasn't just limited to the United States. It went around the planet. And yet all these indexes sliding and all kinds of things that I don't entirely understand. So I turn to people who actually know their stuff, like Pete Earle, who's an economist with the American Institute for Economic Research. Pete, welcome back to the program. And yesterday I saw, okay, Asian markets are sliding or they're due to slide, and that means a big sell-off is coming Monday morning. So the folks on Wall Street in America knew this was coming at them. But what exactly was it that was causing all this? And by the way, welcome back. Peter, you there? Oh, heck. Hold on a second. I thought he was on the line. Hang on. Joel, can you check and make sure that Pete is there? Because I want to talk to him. And I don't know why he's not there, but we're going to get him there. I mean, folks, this is one of those things which could be tremendously bad for people in America. And not just for the people who trade stocks, and not just for the people who have their pensions tied up in investments like that. Ah, there he is. Hey, Pete, welcome to the program.
Great. Great to be back, Lars. How's it?
I don't know if you heard my question, but I was just saying, look, I don't understand this. I don't claim to understand it, but anytime the Asian markets, European markets, and the United States all seem to, you know, go into the toilet at the same time, I know that's got to be bad. So, number one, what caused it? Number two, what does it mean?
Well, there's a couple of things. I mean, the first is that, yeah, we had a legitimate stock market crash earlier today in Japan. The market was down over 12%. Now, a 10% drop in one day is a legitimate crash. But we started to have some weakness in the U.S. markets late last week, and it really has to do with three factors. One is we're getting weak economic data. We had corporate earnings in the last season were not that great. And also, markets had gone very far without taking a breather. So that, on top of growing worries that the Fed maybe hasn't cut rates soon enough, is what's driving down the U.S. markets. And, of course, America's economy being as big as it is, it's hitting countries around the world because we trade with everyone and people rely on our economy as well.
Yeah, so that's what's caught. Well, but they're seeing just weak earnings from the companies, and they're seeing weak numbers. Like, was the jobs number a piece of that? The one that said we got 114,000 new jobs and most of them were in government?
So I think the big tipping factor was, yes, it was that BLS report last Friday, but it was the U3 number that was expected to come in at 4.1%, came in at 4.3%. And that was just sort of the cherry on the cake, because earlier in the week, we found out that continuing claims and initial claims, that's for unemployment, have risen for the fifth or sixth week in a row. They're above averages. You know, we have JOLTS report where we report on people quitting and on job openings, and people are not quitting their jobs, and job openings are falling because people are afraid that the employment market is not going to get them a new job, that they're not going to find one. A number of factors are showing that unemployment is rising much quicker than expected. And so the thought originally was that the Fed maybe was on track to deliver a soft landing, but now there's the thought that the Fed might have kept rates too high for too long and that we may be heading straight on into a recession. That's the worry in terms of financial numbers, in terms of the economic releases.
I'm talking to Pete Earle, who's an economist with the American Institute for Economic Research. Can we fire the Fed? Because, you know, they're supposed to apply the gas or apply the brakes. I understand the theory of how it's supposed to work. And yet they're always late to put the brakes on, always late to put the gas on, and they never seem to get it right. Am I being unfair to our friends, the multi-multi-millionaires who run the pseudo-government, pseudo-private organization known as the Fed?
No, not at all. Two things. First, what's expected of the Fed, and if they had an intellectual honesty whatsoever, they would tell us that it's impossible. What's expected of them is impossible, partially because they don't have the tools, they don't have the information they need. Second, because they have a number of mandates, but two of those mandates are, of course, keeping prices stable and keeping employment as high as possible. Now, early this year, we had a situation where it looked like inflation had actually stopped coming down. We still have inflation of, you know, between 3 and 3.5%, so that's high. But the worry is that if they lower rates now, to address what's happening in employment, they may actually trigger inflation going back up again. If we want to fix the Fed, yeah, firing them would be great. A better thing would be to make them focus on a single mandate, prices alone. Don't worry about unemployment. Don't worry about stock markets, all that. Just focus on keeping prices stable, keeping inflation low. If they were limited to that, they'd probably still mess up, but not as badly as they do when they cause recessions.
But the thing is, Pete, I mean, and tell me if I'm wrong in seeing it this way, but if they don't worry about Wall Street, all their friends on Wall Street will probably stop being so generous with them. Am I right?
That may be true. Yeah. I mean, we rely to a certain extent on the Fed, to administer monetary policy. But for many, many decades, for centuries, we didn't. Why? Because we had a currency, we had a dollar that was designated in weights of gold or silver. So that right there preempted the Fed. There was no need for management of the money system by bureaucrats and by, you know, economic scientists with their lab coats on and stethoscopes. We simply had money that was hard money, and you could convert for dollars to gold or from gold back to dollars. And if you look at the history, we had very stable prices for very long periods of time. We don't need these, you know, pseudoscientists in these big banks in these regions, you know, messing with our money and, you know, dragging us into recessions that we wouldn't otherwise have wound up in.
Well, and what's crazy about this is the banks want to loan money. That's how they make money. And there are people and businesses that want to borrow money. And the thing that's keeping us from doing that is a government, well, not quite a government agency, but not really a government agency, not really a private entity, but they're holding the reins on the entire economy. And we give them all this authority, and they can't seem to do it right.
And we can't seem, for whatever reason, anybody who criticizes the Fed and Congress, when it comes time to vote to audit them, for some reason, everybody gets in line and they refuse to audit them. Very rare is the senator representative who wants to audit the Fed. I think that is a sheer, you know, unbridled scandal in itself. And I think we should, I think the electorate, the American, you know, citizens should hold Congress's feet to the fire and urge some sort of audit of the Fed. I think we might be very unhappy with the stuff we find out inside.
Yeah, Rand Paul may be the only guy who actually believes. I'm sure there are a few others. But Pete Earle is with the American Institute for Economic Research. So last bit, you've got this kind of fall off. What's the long-term outlook, you know, knowing that this has happened? Does this relieve some of the pressure? And what do you think of the silence of both Joe Biden and Kamala Harris today?
Well, I think it's interesting that they're so silent. I mean, they're at a point right now where they've taken so much credit for the economy, which was not justified, that they can't go back now and start blaming the prior administration. It would just, even for them, that would be stooping too low. But as for where this goes, I mean, there is a chance that the market falls a little bit more, valuations get back in line because they're very extended. Maybe, you know, the Fed waits until September and things kind of heal a little bit and then they lower rates. But I mean, you know, this is all like a ballet. Like every piece has to fall into place, and we've got an election coming in the fall and all these other things. I mean, I don't know that we'll enter a recession, but I will say this. I think the soft landing scenario is gone.
It's got Are we already landing. In a recession, Pete?
So the SOM rule, which is a rule that we follow about the 3-month moving averages of U3, whenever the ratio of these two U3 rates exceeds 0.50, half of a percent, we have tended to be in a recession or entering one, and we had that trigger just last Friday. Historically, although there's been one or two false positives, the answer is yes, we may already be in a recession.
And by the way, about blaming the prior administration, I keep telling my audience, Joe Biden keeps running around saying unemployment was 16% when I came in. That's a lie. Inflation was 9% when I came in. That's a lie.
It's a lie.
And old Kamala Harris, she doesn't even know those numbers. She just runs around saying, this is Bidenomics, and it's great, because she's still got her job as vice president and now the potential to get a job as president. And all she can do is run around and talk about how great it is without actually understanding any of it. That is Pete Earle. Pete is with the American Institute for Economic Research. Pete, it is always a pleasure to have you on the show. We'll be back in a moment. I'll get to your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Naysayers always go first on the Lars Larson Show. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network. When it comes to certain...
Saying the things you wish you could say. More with Lars.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Monday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and it's my pleasure to be with you, and I'll be glad to get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. This segment of the show brought to you by Oregon Medical Centers, the regenerative medical specialist, Oregon Medical Centers. Our X poll today: has Joe Biden wrecked the American economy? Now, this is usually the point in my day when I'll get a naysayer, like, say, naysayer Alma, who hails from the Puget Sound region, and she'll call in and tell me how wonderful the Joe Biden economy is. And I'll say to her, well, hasn't inflation gone up faster than people's paychecks? And she'll say, well, yeah, that's true. And then I'll ask her about paychecks, and she says, well, that's terrible. People should make more money. It's as though the people being gaslit by Joe Biden and soon to be gaslit by Kamala Harris are simply willing to believe the lies. I mean, no matter what, they can't believe otherwise, because then that would cause them to say, yeah, I'm going to have to vote for Donald Trump. And it is kind of sad. If you want to sound off, it's easy to do at 866-HEY-LARS. But you can sound off this way as well. Vote in our X poll. Has Joe Biden wrecked America's economy? I'd say yes. And Donald Trump warned us that that was going to happen. Today's X poll, as always, is brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Friday's poll on First Amendment Friday. Should Donald Trump even bother with a debate against Kamala Harris? I said yes. I want to see him debate her, and I want to see what kind of answers, what kind of word salad she serves up for the moderators of a debate, which is going to lead to this. You've got relatively liberal moderators on almost all of the presidential debates. They're going to have to ignore common sense and not challenge the answers that Kamala Harris gives. In fact, just last week, we were playing a soundbite for you of Kamala Harris, who was asked a very simple question, maybe not simple to answer, but you could give a meaningful answer. The reporter, and I think it was a young lady, said, what are you going to do about the massive amount of inflation that has happened in America? And all she would do is restate the problem. Yes, there is inflation in America. Yes, the cost of bread has gone up. Yes, the cost of housing has gone up. Yes, the cost of gasoline has gone up, without ever saying what she's going to do about it. Because, as you know, she cast the tie-breaking vote that caused the passage of the badly named Inflation Reduction Act, which has not reduced inflation. It has, in fact, fueled inflation by spending hundreds of billions of dollars of the taxpayer money into the economy, pushing prices up. So she can't very well answer, what are you going to do to fix it? Because she's part of the vote to cause it in the first place. So 76% of you said Donald Trump should bother with a debate against Kamala Harris, but a rather surprising 24% of you said no. You shouldn't bother debating her at all. I want to give you a couple of the emails that came in, because earlier this hour, I was talking about the fact that hundreds of thousands of people who are registered in multiple states around America registered to vote. And I got this note from Lauren. This young lady tells me, I heard you this afternoon talking about voters who are registered in multiple states. I have been doing numerous voter challenges in Clark County, and many of them are being challenged or registered to vote in multiple states. This notation is always identified in the voter challenge paperwork as part of our research. The Clark County Elections Office refuses to do anything about it if the challenged voter is also registered elsewhere. And this is what Kathy Garber told me in an email. ERIC, which is a private organization, it is not a government entity, and a number of states have signed up for ERIC, the Electronic Registration Information Center, I believe is the way that translates. What they do is they keep track of registered voters in various states. Now, some states, like Alabama, have been smart enough to say, we are getting out of ERIC. We want nothing to do with it. Because here's what's happened. ERIC now has control over the voter registration of tens of millions of Americans. And if you say by control, what do you mean? What I mean is people are registered to vote. The information is held by ERIC. And if you find somebody who is registered to vote in multiple states, you think, well, then you send a notification to this organization called ERIC, and you tell them, and they remove the voter from the rolls. The fact that ERIC is funded by liberal interest groups, it is not funded by the taxpayers, it is not answerable to the taxpayers, and yet voters in states like Oregon and Washington, the state government agencies, have given control over voter registration to this organization called ERIC. As she wrote, ERIC is a tool for states to compare information between each other to clean up the voter rolls. It now only has half of the states participating. It used to be many more states, but states have opted out of it. It is not a perfect tool, but it helps us immensely. But when a state is not part of ERIC, we will not receive any information regarding voters who have moved there. Being registered in two states is not illegal. Voting in two states definitely is. As Lauren puts it, they won't even bother to notify the other states if they're also actively registered elsewhere. They will only inactivate the voter if challenged, and I'm able to prove that they have moved elsewhere. That is how screwed up the system is. When state government officials like this Kathy Garber are willing to say, we will not fix something, even when it's brought to our attention, we will not fix that situation. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show.